Hi, I'm Linda Popke, President of Leverage to Market Associates, and I'm pleased to be here today talking with you about the power of presentation, marketing your ideas effectively. Here's what we'll be talking about today. We're going to discuss key considerations when presenting your organization and your offerings, as well as how to customize your presentations for specific audiences. Plus, you'll learn the top 10 pitfalls to avoid when building marketing materials and presentations, and the gotchas that can make the difference in how you're perceived by your key audiences. Now, this teleseminar is a little bit different than many of the others that you may have listened to or may listen to in the future. Usually, we spend a lot of time talking about content, about your messages, your value proposition, making sure that you have the right content for the right audiences. And today, we're not going to talk about content at all. We're only going to talk about presentation, and I'm going to make the presumption that you've listened to all the other teleconferences, you know what's going on, and you have absolutely fantastic, wonderful content, your messages are right on, you've got a value proposition, you know who your audience is, all those things have already happened. And what you need to think about is how do you best present this, how do you put your best face forward. So why is it important we consider presentation? Well, first, we really do judge books by their cover, contrary to what that old saying says, and we really do pick restaurants by how they look. In fact, we order food off the menu by the description or the pictures that we see. We really do make judgments about businesses based on how they appear to us. So long before your customers or prospects ever actually sample what it is that you do, they are making decisions based on their impression on how you present yourself and your business. Now, when we talk about presentation, there are a number of different things we can think about, including the visual presentation in general, which includes graphics as well as just the look and feel of the way something looks, oral presentation, how you sound, written presentation, including the actual structure of your written communications, and then the image you project overall. We're going to spend some time looking at most of those. First, I want to talk about this, and you may think, well, isn't this a lot about packaging? And the question is a good one, and the answer is absolutely. Why is packaging so important? Well, to tell a quick story, I was in Japan a number of years ago, and we had some really, really tasty sweets and a fancy wrap package with beautiful wrapping paper. They were so incredible that a few days later, we saw the same wrap package in another store, and we bought one expecting to have that great sweet again. Unfortunately, we were really surprised to find that inside the package was some kind of salty, smelly, dried fish concoction. Now, in Japan and many other Asian countries, everything is packaged for presentation, whether it's candy or dried fish or everything else in between. You don't go and you don't buy anything that isn't packaged appropriately. Now, what that means is you can even take something that isn't very nice, and you can make it look good and you can present it effectively. It also means that that the presentation doesn't always cover the content inside. So you need to know what it is you've got underneath that nice packaging. And as I mentioned, we're going to presume that your content is great. However, if you don't have that packaging and if we don't look for that packaging, we don't find what we're looking for, then we can stop right there. So the good news is you've got to have that great packaging. In the U.S., sometimes we go to the opposite extreme. We don't package things at all. We expect people to see the value of our content, to love us because we have great value, even though we all like to see the things look aesthetically pleasing and to sound good, et cetera, before we actually, again, consume the actual product. Let's start with accuracy. And this may sound pretty straightforward, but I have found I teach marketing in a number of classes at the university level and the graduate level, and I am always surprised at how much I have to remind my students, even though I don't teach a writing course, how important it is that they present themselves accurately, particularly in written communications. We live today in a very much a written world, and we're very web-oriented, we're becoming mobile, et cetera. Yes, there's audio, yes, there's video, but still the number one way that we communicate today to other people, even more so now than a few years ago, is through writing. So much of what we do is on the web. It's either email or it's social media or it's websites or it's even texting someone. The latest statistics say that teenagers today don't use their phones for talking, except perhaps to their parents, but mainly for texting. And certainly there's a language and a shorthand that goes with a short message texting that's not the same as if you're doing a business presentation. But that language, if you're going to be communicating to someone else, you need to know that language. You need to be accurate in that. When you're communicating in a business setting, you need to be accurate in the language of business, which means that you have to be accurate. You need to express yourself effectively through written words, and you need to make sure that that there just aren't any blatant errors, things that people will look at and see sloppiness. So what happens is just the same as if you were to go into a restaurant, and maybe the food in this restaurant is absolutely fantastic, but you walk in and the entranceway is a little dusty, and it's a little bit disorganized, and the menus look kind of old and beat up. The table settings aren't quite as neat as they should be. The waiters and waitresses aren't dressed professionally. They're dressed any which way. All that will influence the way that you approach and feel about that place long before you ever get a bite of food into your mouth. So the food may be absolutely incredible, but you may not even stick around long enough to order and eat it if you have all these other things that kind of get in your way. So here are some of the things that you need to do to be able to communicate effectively in a written format. And the first is your spelling needs to be accurate. Now, that may sound pretty straightforward, and you say, well, look, if I'm using Microsoft Word or another tool, I'm using some browsers, they will correct my spelling for me. Don't count on Bill Gates or anyone else to fix your spelling. First of all, there are many words that sound alike that no spell checker on earth is able to understand exactly what your context is. Secondly, spell checkers, and this happens all the time if you turn on some of the spelling aids or supposedly helpful tools on your cell phone, for example, it will try and come up with, as you type some letters, input some letters to a word, it will try to come up with what it thinks is the word you're trying to say. And if you let it do that, you'd be surprised at some of the really strange messages that you will send, because you may be thinking of one word and it finishes another. So even though the words may be spelled correctly, they might not be the correct words in the correct sense. And then there are many words, as I mentioned, homonyms, where they sound alike. There, T-H-E-R-E, as in there is a word for that, or as opposed to T-H-E-I-R, which is their mother came home late, or there, T-H-E-Y-R-E, which is a contraction for they are. That's just one example. Another that I see spelled wrong all the time is it's and it's. So it is, as in it's a great day, would be I-T apostrophe S. If we said that the house has its, we're working to get its roof fixed, that would be I-T-S, as in it belongs to the house, it belongs to something, the possessive. There is no such thing as I-T-S apostrophe, which I see much too many times. And many, many times. And there are a number of other words. I could spend a whole hour going through these. But make sure that those are correct, your spelling is correct, your grammar and punctuation is correct. There are some things that are pretty basic. Understand what we call by agreement in terms of number. So if you talk about one person, it's is. If you talk about multiple persons or things, it's are. So, you know, he is going to do this, but they are going to do it. And that's true. It seems very simple when you use pronouns, but when you get into more complicated sentences, sometimes that falls apart. Punctuation, if you're going to put something into parentheses, the period goes after the parentheses. If you have something in quotes, the period goes inside the quote. So, again, there are rules for all these things, but make sure you're doing that accurate. Even more importantly is your sentence structure. Your sentence structure needs to be effective. You want to make sure that you don't have run-on sentences, that you're not going on and on and on, that your language isn't verbose or unclear. You want to be as clear and concise and to the point as possible. Now, once you've considered that, you need to also think about how your content will be used. Now, the attention span of individuals today is extremely, extremely short. We've become used to sound bites, 10 to 15-second TV commercials. 2 minutes on a YouTube video seems like a very, very long time, and YouTube is now the number two search engine on the web, so certainly people are spending a lot of time there looking at videos. So you need to be very, very short. You need to understand how it's used. You're not writing a dissertation. You want to get to the point. If you are presenting something very technical, you may need to get into more detail. If you're presenting something more high level, you need to make sure that that you really are short and to the point, and you're not spending too much time explaining things that don't need to be explained in the presentation. You want to make sure your paragraphs are short and easy to read. You also want to offer various forms of delivery. So you may want to offer content in a written form, audio, if it makes sense, video. You also want to make sure you have online options as well as offline options. So all of this is how you're going to make your material and your presentations available to your audiences. Now, next, you want to make sure that your material is graphically appealing. So you want to use fonts that are easy to read. You want to make sure that the typeface doesn't get in the way. Too often, we have so many choices of things we can do in terms of typefaces and colors and all kinds of graphic elements that we can really go overboard. And really, if you think about all of these things, they're there to make you look professional and certainly for highlighting or featuring certain text or certain images. But if you highlight everything and if you put too much in there, it's just very, very difficult. As a rule, a serif font, which is the fonts of the little kind of curly Q things at the bottom, such as Times Roman, that's better for a hard copy text like a book. If you pick up any written book, you will probably find about 90% of the text on a page of a book is what we call a serif font, because it's easy for the eyes to see. However, when you go to a website and you look at the text on most good websites, 90% of those are sans serif, or what we call without a serif. And that's because in a visual medium, looking at little dots, it's much easier to see and to read a font that of that type. And that's kind of like an Arial font. You may see some things. Verdana is used very much now on websites. So all of those are anything that's sans serif is better for a web type of presentation. Anything that's serif is better for hard copy. But the key thing is to pick a font and be consistent about it. You may want to have one font for headlines, another for text. That's fine. Don't change it every page. Don't add too many fonts to a presentation. It's just too hard to read. You want to use graphics and pictures judiciously. So that means that certainly you do not want to give a presentation that is page upon page upon page of long, drawn-out bullets of text. That's going to put people to sleep. But you don't want to have thousands of pictures that are too hard for me to process as you're presenting this as well. So you want to use graphics, you want to use pictures to really illustrate points. Where it makes sense to show rather than to tell, you want to use a picture or perhaps a chart. If you're using a tool such as PowerPoint, they have some very easy ways to create some very attractive 3D pie charts or bar graphs or things of that nature. Much easier for me to look at a pie chart and say 72% of this market belongs to X and 24% to someone else, rather than have that as bullets and have to think about it. So that certainly makes sense, but don't add pictures and graphics just to add pictures and graphics. They should have a reason that they're there, and they should help your audience understand the point you're getting across. Now, when you are doing text, use headlines and subheadlines to break up text. Again, if you look at well-written magazines or well-written newspaper articles, they don't go on and on and on and on. The article may go on for a long time, but you'll see headlines. You'll see subheadlines that break it up. You'll see what we call a sidebar, which is perhaps a little box that says, did you know that such and such and such and such, with a specific either a quote or a statistic or something relevant to the article. And that breaks the flow up. It makes it easier for your eyes rather than going on and on and on. If you look at some scientific journals, you'll see that for the most part those tend to be text after text, even though they will include graphics or charts when appropriate. Much harder to read, much harder to get through. So think about from your presentations how you can break up the text if you do have a lot of text and make it easier on your audience. Again, make your paragraphs short. Make sure they're easy to read. Don't go on and on. When in doubt, cut it out. And when you see something that takes up more than a couple of lines, try to find a logical place to break it up. We find, particularly, again, with web text, that what may have been considered a reasonable paragraph in a written format, when you're looking at something online and you've only got the real estate, so to speak, of perhaps a laptop screen, or as I'll mention a little later, mobile screens, which are getting even smaller, things have to be very short. Better to break up a longer paragraph into two or three paragraphs rather than have it go together and the eye just says, I can't read it. It becomes kind of gray and it's not communicating well. Now, things to consider as you're building your presentation. The first is the audience. Who are they and what is their background? And I mean that in not just in you know, where did they come from and what title do they have, but are they used to seeing presentations in this format? How are they used to material being developed? Do they understand what you're presenting to them? Is this the first time that they're seeing something that might be complicated or perhaps difficult for them to understand or accept? Do they have, in general, are they engineers and very highly technical? Are they not sophisticated? Is it a consumer audience versus a business audience? All of those questions will help you to build presentations to the audience. And again, I'm not saying that you should necessarily dumb down the content, so to speak, but you should present material in a way that people are best able to absorb it. You want to understand how sophisticated your audience is in terms of your subject matter. Do they know the jargon that you just take for granted? The abbreviations, the phrases, the silent or hidden language that we may be thinking about all the time, does our audience understand that? Do they understand abbreviations? Do we have to spell things out? Do we have to spend time kind of setting the stage with that? That's very important to know. Also, you need to understand what you want to convey. We do presentations for a number of reasons. Obviously, we want to impress someone. We want to get a message across. But there are a number of reasons beyond that. We might want to educate our audience. We may want to be talking about something that's new. I just sat through a series of presentations for a local TEDx conference yesterday in the Bay Area. And these are short presentations, 10 to 12 minutes long, and they're each kind of educating you about a little bit of a different topic. And so in some cases, people were very familiar with the topic. In some cases, we had no background whatsoever, and the presentations there needed more support materials. They needed to tell us more. They needed to bring us up to speed. So consider what you want to convey, what your goal is. Are you educating people? Are you selling? Are you presenting to an audience that is inclined to agree with you? Or do you have to spend more time setting the stage so that they'll understand what you want to get across? So all of that is very important. What's also important is what we call the call to action afterwards. So you're not doing a presentation because you're in the business of doing presentations. You want to accomplish something. So at the end of the presentation, what is it that you want? If you are an entrepreneur and you're going for venture capital funds, then what you want is to understand whether these individuals watching this want to find out more about your company. Are they interested in investing? Do they want to get into more detail? Do they want to do due diligence? If I'm presenting something very educational, then perhaps there's a link that I want to tell people or an action I want them to take now that they've learned about something. If I'm a nonprofit organization, maybe the link is or the call to action is fundraising. We'd like to have your help or we need a volunteer. If I'm presenting material to a client, it may be to educate them and to inform them about the results we learned from a consulting project. And the next call to action is, what are you going to do with these? How are you going to analyze this? So whenever you do a presentation, there's a reason you do it, and there's something that should be different at the end of the presentation. If not, then why are you doing the presentation? So what is it that's going to be different, and what is it that you want your audience to do or think or remember afterwards? If you start with that, that will help to make sure that what you present stays on track. Now, let's talk about looking at visuals, in particular video. Video, as I mentioned, is becoming more and more and more important for a couple of reasons. First of all, we have the technology. We now have flip cameras that are $100, $150. We also have video capabilities. It actually is quite good on things like iPhones and Android phones and Blackberries. So we have the ability to do video. We also have the ability to to send video and to see video online in a fairly robust manner. So where a few years ago it might be very hard to have the bandwidth, most people didn't have the bandwidth available, high-speed video, to see a video without it kind of breaking up and having to wait for the rest of the video to load, or it looked choppy or things didn't look good. We now have high-definition, low-cost video, and we can get it very quickly. And most of us can access YouTube or other video channels. We can access video on mobile devices. So all of these reasons are making it more and more likely that you'll need to be producing some video. In this case, again, think about the fact that as next time you watch a commercial, as opposed to letting it fast forward on your DVR, actually time and see how long that advertisements are. Where we used to at one point have 60-second commercials, and then more recently 30-second, now you'd be surprised there are an awful lot of advertisements are just 5 or 10 or 15 seconds. And are we becoming much accustomed to this? We're used to seeing these happen in a short time frame, and so our attention span is very, very short. Therefore, if you're going to do a video, I'm presuming this is something that you want your audience to kind of capture quickly. You want to have a clear message. You don't want to ramble, and you want to get through it in just a couple of minutes. A minute of video, 2 minutes is getting long. If you're going to be doing a demonstration or providing a long introduction to something, perhaps it's a training video, that would be different. But if you're just presenting something in video, you want to make sure it's very, very short. You don't want to include too much, either visually or orally. You want to make sure that you're focused on the point. You don't want it to be too busy. You also want to consider what works best in this medium. And video is a great way to show things. Certainly, you can also talk through a video, but if all you were doing was talking, you would just do an audio. So you want to show things. You want to be able to see what's happening. Anytime you can show and not tell in video, that makes it much stronger. Now, what's kind of the corollary to that is to think about presentations where you don't have video, where you have just audio or oral presentations. And these really break into two types of presentations. One is where you're in physically in the same location with someone, so it's happening, you're presenting to a group. The second is where it's happening through some kind of distance, some kind of long distance or virtual medium. And this could be a teleseminar like we're doing now. It could be a webinar. It could be a telepresence type of system where you can sort of see the person there. These are getting very, very good, but you're not in the same room with them, so you don't have the same ability to influence them. And one of the things to think about with presentations is all the different touch points and the different dimensions that you have, so to speak. If we're dealing with something over the web, email, written communication, text messages, it's very one-dimensional. All you see is the text. You can put some little emoticons. You can put some little smileys in there. But I can't hear your voice. I don't understand the emotion. If you're telling a joke or you're being ironic or you're trying to have some satire, it can come across as very flat because I don't see that. I don't hear you. I don't see you. I don't see your body language, etc. If we get to an oral communication, such as perhaps this teleseminar, you hear my voice. You can hear how fast I'm going. You can see whether I'm from an oral perspective. You can hear actually whether I'm putting emphasis into certain areas, passion and emotion. So that's two-dimensional. When you add video, you kind of get to a third dimension. Now I can see the presenter. I can see their facial movements. I can see their body language. I can see what they're doing, etc. When we get to being in person, there's almost a fourth dimension there, because what you get in addition to everything else is you get that sense of presence of you can almost feel sometimes the passion in someone when they're right in front of you. You can also you get a better sense of you can be interacting with the individuals across the room. You can respond to people. So there's more and more dimensions. And as we take those away, we have to be more effective in how we present ourselves. So if you're doing an oral presentation and you don't have the luxury or perhaps the baggage sometimes of having visuals in front of you, you have to be able to communicate, as I am here today, for example, in this teleseminar, totally through your voice and totally through the way that you speak. Now, a couple of tips, and this may sound silly, but I've heard this from people. If you think about this and try it, you will find that it works. And salespeople tell me it makes a big difference. Remember to smile when you're on the phone. Now, that may sound very silly because certainly you can't see whether I'm smiling or not, but you can hear in my voice whether I'm smiling or not, whether I'm happy, whether I'm anxious, whether I'm concerned, whether I'm feeling very intense or very nervous. All that comes across in your voice. The other thing that salespeople often do, particularly when they're in-house internal salespeople on the phone, they'll have a mirror right across from them sitting at their desk, and they'll look at themselves in the mirror and make sure that they have a positive image in the mirror back to them as they're on a telephone call. So think about that. How can you call? You can be dressed any way you like. You can have your feet up. You can be sitting wherever you want, etc. But you still need to make sure that you're portraying your presentation in a very positive image. Now, you want to consider the speed at which you speak. Certainly, if you're speaking to people who are not used to English as a foreign language, or they're not as sophisticated and you're talking about technical material, perhaps you're a physician and you're giving a presentation to an audience about some kind of a medical concern, you want to slow things down and have people have the chance to really absorb what you're saying. On the other hand, you don't want to be so unnaturally slow that it's very hard to keep up with the train of thought, and really that sounds like you're kind of condescending. So you want to make sure that you have a speed that works effectively for you. Again, you want to watch the jargon because I don't have even a visual to guide me. If I start to talk about ABC, HQ, P, whatever, not only do I may my audience not understand what I'm talking about, but there's not even a visual that gives them a clue. So give people time to absorb the content. The other thing, when you're in an interactive presentation, so perhaps you're doing a conference call, it's an interactive type of web conference or teleseminar as opposed to this, which is really one way, you want to spend time listening and not just talking. You want to allow for some silence. You want to allow the time to break up thoughts, to go back and forth, to let people perhaps absorb the content that you're talking about, raise any questions. You may want to set the stage by saying, look, here's what I'd like to do. We have a lot of material to cover here. If you'll bear with me, I'd like you to hold off questions until we get to the end, then we'll have plenty of time for your questions. Or you can say, you know, the way I find works very effectively with this type of topic, please feel free to interrupt and ask questions as we go so that we make sure that we're all on the same page. Either way can work. Whatever works better for you, knowing your audience, knowing your content, knowing how you feel more effectively in terms of making a presentation. Now, one thing you may want to consider, if you know the audience well, there are some people that you know once they start on asking a question will get off track and questions will go on forever. And you, in that case, you may want to put questions off to the end. If you do allow questions in the middle of a presentation or even at the end, particularly if you're not in person, you need to be able to control the situation and say, look, I'm going to take one or two quick questions. As someone gets into a question, sometimes they spend more time rethinking the question. What I started out was this, but what I really want to make the statement, and then I'm not sure what my question is. You need to be able to say, stop right there. I think what I heard you say is, or I think the question that we should be addressing is, let me stop and respond to that. And be sure that you keep control of the presentation and you don't allow these questions and interruptions to take you way down another track. We've all been in presentations where that's happened, and it hasn't been fun for any of us. Now, a couple of things to think about, special considerations for virtual presentations. If you're doing a webinar, if you have a visual in front of you, make sure that the material really is visually attractive. If you're going to be doing some type of webinar or a PowerPoint that's being shared, a presentation being shared visually amongst people. Don't have text after text after text. Make sure there's something that breaks it up. Make sure that you're presenting the material in as effective a way as possible, using graphics and charts, photographs, etc., to make your points and to make it easy to follow along. Also, don't expect a PowerPoint or a presentation of that nature to carry the full weight of your presentation. If everything I needed to say and needed to convey was in the actual presentation, why would I need to be there on the phone or on the internet as part of this? So I don't want to be reading slides. I don't want to be reading bullet after bullet after bullet. First of all, we're presuming your audience can read that themselves. Secondly, that's just not very effective. So as you're building a presentation, make sure that you don't have all the content on all the, on every slide. You don't have multiple pages of long bullets or very, very small type because you've got 12 bullets to a slide. Get the main points there and then add to it so that your presentation itself provides value rather than just reading the slides. You've got to presume the audience is somewhat distracted. Again, our attention span is very short. When we are, even when we're in the same room with someone, we see people and they're texting, they're perhaps tweeting about something, they're maybe checking their email, they're doing other things. But certainly when you're in a virtual environment, we have to presume that the audience is multitasking. They may be listening to you, they may be looking at a slide, they may be checking their mail, they may be doing something else. So consider that, and consider that you need to stay as succinct as possible. Try to provide various ways to convey the information so that it's not, if I missed one bullet or I missed one sentence, I'm totally lost. And some of the web conferencing tools like WebEx and GoToMeeting, they actually have a way for you to look afterwards, and they can tell you of the people who are on your call as part of your meeting, how many of them actually had that window open in the front of their screen and how many of them had it stuck to the back and really weren't paying attention whatsoever. Now, you need to think about archiving. How are you going to store these presentations? Are you going to make your presentation available afterwards? Is the topic timely? Is it something that's only relevant for a short period of time? If you know, for example, that a presentation will be stored, do you want to refer to dates and times? Do you want to talk about the fact that it's December now or it's November or this just happened, etc.? There are times that you might want to. If perhaps you're talking about changes in American politics, you can say we just had a recent election and Congress and House of Representatives is changing hands. So there may be times when you want to refer to something, but if there may be times when if a presentation is going to be what we call evergreen and be available for a long period of time, you don't want to put in too many things that are very specific to the current date or time, et cetera, that may distract from the long-term use of the presentation. Now, teleseminars are a very nice alternative to webinars, as we're doing here today. And there are several reasons that I find actually teleseminars can work more effectively. First of all, you use these when visuals are either not necessary or could be a distraction or really take away from the presentation. So when you put a visual in front of someone, their eye normally goes to that. They may be listening to you, but you have to reinforce what's being said, and you have to realize that, again, they may be looking other places. When you're just focusing from an audio perspective, it allows you to get away from having to create all these visuals and perhaps use them as a crutch to enhance your presentation but not necessarily make it more powerful. The other thing about teleseminars is it allows people to listen to the recording afterwards and not necessarily be in front of a screen. So they could put it on their iPod or their iPhone. They can put it on their CD player, make it available as an MP3 file. So it's something that they can enjoy or they can interact with in various times. So there are reasons to use a video or webinar. There are reasons to use audio. There are reasons to use written communications. And you want to use some of each of those. Now, I want to spend a few moments talking about considerations when you're presenting within a mobile environment. And this, you may say, well, how many times am I going to present to someone's cell phone? You'd be surprised. Mobile is the fastest growing segment in technology in terms of faster than desktops and laptops and whatever we're seeing. We started out with smartphones and Blackberries. We now have iPhones and Droids, and now we have tablets. And so you may not have, where you may have thought, gee, my presentation will never be seen on a Blackberry, and maybe it will be seen on an iPhone, but probably unlikely. It's quite possible as we continue to evolve this technology. Very often in the future, presentations will be mostly seen on a tablet. And the difference between a tablet and a laptop is the way information is conveyed at times, the way we interact with it, the size, etc. So you need to make sure of a couple of things. First of all, consider that the display area will be smaller. So if you are doing some kind of visual presentation where you're actually showing slides, again, another reason not to have lots and lots of bullets, lots and lots of small type. As you get to a smaller display area, even if it was somewhat legible in a larger screen, it's not going to be seen. It's not going to be able to be understood. The resolution is getting better, but certainly you need to be careful about making sure that anything that's very, very complex or complicated may not come across in a small screen, and what's the best way to do that. You want to think about compatibility. Right now, there are still some issues around iPhones and not being able to use flash demonstrations. So if you are doing some kind of flash in your presentation, consider that that today would not work on an iPhone medium. Eventually, I'm sure this will get solved, and between Adobe and Apple, they'll work this out. But that's something to consider. Again, even more so than before, you need to be short, to the point, compelling. Again, we kind of have this ADD now when it comes to presentations. We need to get our message across as quickly as possible and as simply as possible. Consider how the presentation might be used, when it might be accessed, where it might be accessed. Is this something that might be accessed, as someone is moving around in a car or walking, et cetera? Is it something that might be accessed just because kind of like an e-book? It's easier to have it there, but I'm not necessarily going to be looking at it in a quick environment. So consider those things when you're putting together a presentation. And again, mobile is becoming more and more and more relevant and more used in our daily lives in general. And the other thing that starts to happen as we create these new technologies is we can incorporate them into our presentations. There was a time when if you did a PowerPoint type of presentation, it was text or maybe some charts. Now you can incorporate audio, you can incorporate video, you can incorporate websites, you can go to live websites, you can put links in, all of those types of things start to become multimedia, and we can reach people in a lot of different ways. So to just kind of recap a second, we've talked about why it's so important to be accurate and to be clear about your presentations. We've talked about things to consider from a visual perspective, about graphics, orally or when you're doing audio presentations, written presentations, some PowerPoint things, et cetera. And now let's talk actually a little bit more about PowerPoint. PowerPoint is really best used as a supplement to a live speaker, not as a way to communicate huge chunks of information. You want to have no more than 5 or 6 bullets to a slide and no more than 3 text-only slides without a graphic or a picture. And again, as we talk about going into more of a mobile environment, more of an online environment, I'd say even no more than 2 slides without some kind of graphic or picture. Sometimes there is a lot of text you need to communicate, but please make sure to try and make this as painless for the audience as possible. Consider that they're listening and they're absorbing this, and how can you get the information across? Too often we've all been subjected to PowerPoint presentations that that just go on and on forever. We also find that there's material that should have been presented in a different format or a different method that's put into PowerPoint just because it's there and because it's easy to use and because we can communicate it that way. And it just isn't effective in terms of how to get that content and that material across to your audience. So now that we've looked at a lot of those things, I'd like to spend just a few minutes talking about the physical demeanor of a presenter. Now, there are entire courses in this. You could take a 3-day program on how you improve your speaking skills, how you improve your presence, So I'm not going to spend a lot of time going into details about this, but just a few things to think about because you are the presentation. And again, you may be doing this over audio where it doesn't really matter what you're wearing. It may not be something that you're in person, but let's consider when you are in person, when you are presenting, whether it's to a it's a business meeting, whether it's a conference, a presentation, a speech, or a keynote or something of that nature. What's important is, first of all, always look professional. Very, very important. And I know that that's what professional means varies depending on who you're talking to, depending on what industry you're in, and even depending on the type of company. If you're working with a startup, it's going to be very different than working with a very large established company in terms of what their expectations are. So you need to understand your audience, but you need to also have a level of professionalism in the way you look, in the way you dress, in the way you appear, that is consistent no matter where you go. And so I would always argue, err on the side of being too professional rather than too casual. And this is true even if you're at a place that has casual Friday or a casual every day of the week. You want to appear to be a little bit better rather than come in and look like you could be part of the cleaning crew. So it's very, very important that you look professional. You are presented first, just as if I mentioned earlier you go into a restaurant and we judge the restaurant by the way the menu looks, by the way the tables are set, by how clean or dirty it is and how messy it is. People also start to judge the value of what you provide by how you look when they first see you. Now, as you do presentation, if you're in person, make sure to use good eye contact. Make sure to engage with your audience. Make sure you have positive body language. And, again, there are books you can read. There are courses you can take. There are videos you can look at. There's a lot of basic things about not slumping, about standing up straight, stand on both feet, don't sway back and forth, don't play with change in your pockets, some really basic things like that. So make sure that you have good presence. Make sure that you establish good eye contact, particularly if you're presenting to Americans. If you are presenting to people from other nationalities, you need to understand what works effectively for them. In many Asian cultures, for example, it is not expected that I would maintain eye contact with the audience on a continuous basis. So understand where you are and the expectations, but presuming you're talking to an American audience, you need to maintain eye contact. You can't be looking at the ground. You should not be looking at your slides. Certainly you can refer to them, but if you have to stand and read the slides, then that turns your back to the audience, and the audience says, why are they here? All they're doing, I can read the slides myself. So maintain that presence with the audience. Turn to people who are addressing you. Turn back. Don't spend a lot of time with looking at written notes. If you do have to have some notes, try to make them bullets. Certainly it's okay to refer and say, I wanted to go into more detail about what's on this slide. We did a survey. We talked to 25 people. Here's what we found. So it's okay certainly to refer to that. You don't need to memorize everything. On the other hand, you want to make sure that you're not reading from a script, because I don't want to watch a presentation of someone reading from a script. I want someone to interact with me. So very, very important. Practice speaking slowly and clearly. Practice making sure that you have the key points. The old story about telling presentations is setting up presentations is tell me what you're going to tell me, and then tell me what you told me. So I'm going to introduce this. I'm going to talk today about some tips for doing presentations. I'm going to give you all these tips, bing, 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 and at the end I'm going to summarize and say here is what we learned about tips in doing presentations. So it's very, very important. That sets the stage. It allows people to kind of know what's coming and helps them to get in the right framework to absorb what you're talking about. So beyond that, I'm not going to focus, again, too much on how you present yourself, except to say that you should seriously consider that, because you really set the tone with the way that you approach a podium, the way you approach a presentation, the way you get started, commanding a room. If you can use humor effectively, do so. Be careful about telling jokes. Jokes, again, can fall flat. Something you may think is very funny may be not funny at all. certainly avoid anything that's politically connected one way or the other in terms of humor. Avoid anything that with sexual innuendos, anything dirty. You don't know who's in the audience and how they may be impacted by any of these things. And avoid anything that's complicated humor. But certainly, if you want to be a little bit humorous in your approach, and talk about if you find a way to integrate something that you know relates to the audience that you can talk about, that's great to do. But be very, very careful about jokes that just are meant well, and you'll be able to tell they just aren't working. If at any point you find something like that, back off from that and go back to just presenting content. Now, what I want to do next is spend a few minutes before we finish up here talking about something that is going to sound a little strange, but I don't think people think about this enough, and that's the afterlife of a presentation. And I'm not talking about that once you've thrown it away, it goes to heaven or hell or whatever. But what happens to a presentation after you leave? Because most presentations don't just disappear. Where does the presentation go? Is there a physical hard copy you leave behind? Is there a online or soft copy? Is there something on the web? If so, who sees it? Beyond the people in the room who may say, can I get a copy of what you just presented? Does this go to other people in an organization? If you make a presentation at a conference, do you expect that the individuals there will be passing on your material to someone else? If so, how will that be accessed? Will it be accessed as a written handout? Will it be something that will be available online? Will it be a video that's available either through your own website or through perhaps a client making that available to their employees or a public medium such as YouTube? And then what's most important is how will this presentation be interpreted without you there? So if, for example, you did a PowerPoint presentation, it was very effective, but you did add value. You didn't just read the bullets. You had slides that required you to talk to them and interpret for your audience what was going on. How will that interpretation happen to additional people who see your presentation or are presented with it after you're not there? And certainly that's one reason why some of the webinar type of tools are very, very effective, because you're allowed to create an archive that has not just the physical presentation or the visual, but has an audio of you explaining that, and so you're there in a virtual sense afterwards. But that's not always possible, nor is it always desirable to do it that way. So consider this. Consider what the afterlife is of your presentation when you are no longer in the room with it or on the phone or part of this. And as considering that, one of the things you want to think about is, what are the leave-behinds? What is it that you want to leave me with at the end of the presentation? And very often it may not be the presentation itself. Maybe it's a one-page handout that summarizes the key bullets, the key learnings that we've gotten from the presentation. Perhaps it's a very often what I will do is I have my 10 tips sheets. So Linda's 10 tips for improving your online brand, Linda's 10 tips for building your personal brand reputation, etc. So very often, even though I will address those in more detail in a presentation, rather than give you the presentation, I will leave you the one-page 10 tips as a leave-behind, as a handout. Now, if you're going to leave any kind of presentation behind in a hard copy or in a soft copy, and particularly as a soft copy, my recommendation is that you save these in a PDF format that cannot be changed. And there's a reason for that. Of course, we don't want someone to go in and make changes to a presentation and perhaps alter the content or the flow or the intent. And having it as a PDF prevents that. But also, it also ensures that the font you use, the spacing, the formatting stays correct, particularly as this presentation may get put on the web. It may get downloaded for someone who has a PC, then to someone who has a Mac, to someone who has a mobile device, etc. And in all places, there is the possibility for various software, various browsers, various operating systems to misinterpret or corrupt sometimes some of the things that you've spent a lot of time putting together. So if you create something, when I do my 10 tips, for example, I have them formatted in a very specific manner, and I use a font that I think looks very effective. And that's, I then present that to you as a PDF. And I learned this the hard way when one day I sent a Word file to someone for a handout, and they handed this thing out, and it just looked horrible. And it was because, for whatever reason, the font that I'd always used wasn't showing up right on their PC, and they had substituted another font, and then the lines didn't space right, and it went to a second page instead of one page, and it was just a mess. So always try to any kind of leave behinds. For numerous reasons, you want them as a PDF, and it makes it much easier for people to distribute this. Now, something else very, very important with your presentations and your leave behinds, always, always, always have contact information and multiple methods on each piece. And what I mean by that is, even if you put something on the web, certainly you may want to have a website or an email address, but have a physical address, have a phone number. And if I hand you something in a written communication that has a physical address and a phone number, have a website, have an email address, have a way to contact me, have a whether it's a Twitter address or you want to have Facebook information or YouTube or whatever. But people will contact you in various ways depending on what's appropriate for them, not on what you prefer. So make sure that whatever you do with a presentation, anytime you leave something behind, that it includes all the different ways for people to contact you. I can't tell you how many times I've had to go and I look at a presentation, doesn't have a phone number, doesn't have an email address, doesn't have a physical address, very, very hard to find someone, and makes it very, very difficult. So always consider that. And always, again, when you think about a presentation, consider the afterlife. What's going to happen when you're not there? So finally, what I'd like to do is just spend a moment talking about the 10 pitfalls that you want to avoid when doing presentations. And these are all things that I've seen, and I'm sure you have as well, in presentations that just didn't quite meet the grade. The first is, don't cram too much into one presentation. This is not going to be the end-all and be-all. Your one chance to get in front of an audience and cram in the entire, knowledge of Western civilization into one 40-minute presentation. So do not have too much information. Be sure you have a flow. You understand what you want to accomplish. You make sure that what you want to say gets from here to there. If you have a lot of extra material, say here's an appendix. We can go into this. If you have questions and you want to delve deeper, I can go back and access that. But let's just make sure here's what we're going to accomplish here and here's what we're going to include in the presentation. The second is not to have the wrong content for your audience. And that means either that your audience is not sophisticated or too sophisticated for the way you're presenting it. They might know the information, they're not interested in the information, etc. So make sure you have the right content for the right audience. Number three, getting into the cramming too much in the one presentation, is don't put too much on one slide. And I see this happen so many times, particularly with technical audiences. We can take that PowerPoint slide and we can make the text smaller, we can put multiple columns, we can add some arrows and things, and next thing you know, you're looking at something that looks like some kind of hieroglyphical map of the entire universe, and it's just not effective. When in doubt, leave it out. When you can break it up, break it up. You can use a method of building, so starting out with one point, and then the next slide builds so it has the second, and then there's a graphic with the third. That may be a way to get across complicated material, but have some sympathy on your audience and understand that they're going to have to process all this, so do not put too much on a slide. Fourth, a gotcha that I see is overdosing on graphics and fonts and colors and photos. Just because you can doesn't mean you should. So really consider, do I need that red font all the way through there? Do I really want to have those green and purple graphics on every slide? Try to err on the side of being more minimalistic and just use, certainly if we have things that are splashed with color throughout, then color just doesn't seem to attract our attention. But if we really want to use color sparingly, and then when we do see that color, then it will have more meaning for us. So that was number four. Number five, one of the gotchas I see is focusing totally on either content or graphics and looks without considering the other. So I've got great content. Why do I really care whether or not it looks good. My content is so outstanding. And we've talked about why that's not a good approach. The opposite of that is to say, I've got this incredibly wonderful presentation. The graphics are great, whatever. Everything looks wonderful. So what that the content really doesn't say very much? Look at the great graphics. And how many presentations have we all sat in where that happened and, man, we just couldn't wait to get out of there. So you need to consider both content and presentation. Next, consistency. Inconsistency, where things are different every time, whether it's every time we refer to a particular topic or every time we put together a graphic, it looks a little different. One of the things that I find is very effective when you start a presentation, if you're going to be presenting a number of, for example, data points, is to choose, I'm either going to use bar charts or I'm going to use pie charts or whatever, and then use that same format consistently every time. If I'm showing last year versus this year, then last year's in blue and this year's in red, or last year's in green and this year's in orange. Whatever it is, but every time I do that on every slide to be consistent, and then very easily the audience up on inconsistencies. Another gotcha is using the wrong medium for the wrong purpose. So, again, there are things if you want to show, video is a great way to show. If there's things you want need to talk through and explain, audio is a great way to do that. Don't use PowerPoint for something that should be video or audio. Don't use PowerPoint for something that should be a written handout with lots of text that needs to be read in detail. So use the right medium at the right time. Don't try to be something you're not. We hear the word inauthentic quite a bit these days, so don't try to do something that you shouldn't be. Don't try to get across something in your presentation that isn't going to work with your audience. I mentioned that in a live setting, you're able to control your body language, but you're also able to read the body language of your audience. You'll be able to see, are they slumping down? Are they looking distracted? Do they look like they can't wait for the bell to ring at recess as if they're in third grade and get out of there, or are they engaged? And how do you keep them engaged? How do you work with them? If they don't feel that what you're saying and presenting makes sense for you from the presenter, then they will have that sense of inauthenticity and that you're trying to be something you're not, and it won't work. Another gotcha to avoid is focusing on one medium to the exclusion of all others. I love PowerPoint, so everything I do will be PowerPoint. I love written lists, so everything I do will be a written list. Again, use the various media available to you to the best of your ability and where they make sense and where they fit in with the needs of the audience as well. Finally, the 10th pitfall, which is one that we totally have control over, is not being prepared before a major presentation. And there's preparation in terms of having the presentation ready, but it's also, again, understanding the audience, understanding their time constraints, knowing any particular maybe major events that are happening, things that may impact how people perceive your presentation, having gone through the presentation. If you're using a webinar tool to make sure that you've tested the tool, that you've loaded presentations in advance, and you're not using it for the first time, you understand how to have a backup in case something doesn't work. So make sure that you're prepared, that you've walked through it, you're familiar with the slides. Something I always find interesting is when someone clicks to a slide and say, and they kind of look at it like, where did that slide come from? And you're wondering, did someone else do the presentation or what? So all of those are important ways and pitfalls that you can avoid to have more powerful presentation. So finally, because we're just about out of time, I just want to remind you that you are your business. How you present yourself impacts your business and impacts your sales and your revenue. So be sure to project confidence. Go out there. Have a great time. This is Linda Popke for Leverage to Market Associates. If you'd like to find out more about our programs and get some of those top 10 lists I was talking about, please go to www.leverage2market.com, leveragetomarket.com, and look at our resources section. Thank you for joining us.
This conference is no longer being recorded.